There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
Really excited to be joined by a great foodie panel this afternoon. I've got with me Josh Branson, who is the man behind Bistro in the Park and new Mexican eatery El Mustacho. Good afternoon, Josh.
Good afternoon, Helen.
Thank you. It's nice to see you here. Normally I'm in your gaff and you're in mine this time.
We miss you. I want you back.
I know. I'm like normally in Bistro about five times a week. It gets a little bit embarrassing sometimes. But yeah, it's nice to have you on my home turf. Now, the new Mexican eatery isn't even open yet. It's opening in about 3 weeks.
About 3 weeks, yes.
I love the kind of Dubai.
Yeah, right. It was 3 weeks ago. Now I'm looking about 3 weeks.
That's the way of the world. But we're going to get some sneak peek at some of the dishes right here this afternoon. Really, really excited for that. And you've brought in Chef Isaac.
Yes.
Hi, Isaac.
Hello. How are you?
Hola.
Hola, hola.
That's as far as my knowledge goes. So really looking forward to trying some of those dishes. Chef James Hitchens is here. He is the founder of Hitchens Kitchens, personal chef and a culinary consultant who's, it's fair to say your days could include anything from teaching a clueless, you know, cook like me to catering a dinner party on a private yacht for 40 people.
Yeah, exactly. Nice to see you, Helen.
Yeah, thank you. Again, last time I saw you, you were actually teaching me and my husband how to cook, and it was an absolute pleasure to have you in the home and teaching us, and yeah, it was brilliant, absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, we had a really good afternoon.
Yeah, we did. We cooked, we did some Asian Thai chili prawns with a delicious salad, which the spring onion chopping was not my finest moment, and we did delicious sea bass, some Lyonnaise potatoes, and then the most epic tarte tatin. So I think if Chef James can teach me how to cook tarte tatin, it's safe to say you can teach pretty much anybody. And we've got the lovely Sally Prosser of My Custard Pie joining us, a regular face and voice on the show. And you're really well loved and well admired, Sally, you're one of the region's most trusted authorities on food and travel. You are?
Well, I'm just a keen eater and a keen traveller. That's my only qualification.
But you write beautifully. Your photos are stunning. So I must confess, you put a photo up this morning of hot cross buns and my immediate response was, I hope you're going to bring some in for us.
And I have.
You have?
Yes.
So what's in front of you?
So I've been testing my way through the hot cross buns of the UAE.
I haven't finished,
so I'm still on a hunt. So if anyone knows where I can get hot cross buns, please let me know on my Instagram or Twitter, etc.
Text us right now if you're on the hot cross bun hunt as well. You can get in touch with the show. You can give us a call 04-423-1010 or text us 4001 or use the Dubai Eye Messenger app so you can message us for free. So where have you tried so far and what have you brought for us today, Sally?
So I've brought in today some from Baker & Spice, and I've got traditional, and I am a traditionalist. They're my favourite so far. They're slow rise and a bit more substantial, but there's some chocolate ones in there as well.
I'm not sure, but let's give them a try. On the Thursday brunch show, we normally ask just one person to feed us, and we've got three people feeding us this afternoon. Marcus in the booth is very excited about this. He's like, what's in tomorrow? And I was like, we've got a Mexican and we've got a personal chef, and Sally's coming in, so she might bring us some treats too. So we're very, very lucky indeed. Now, we'll be trying some of these dishes later on in the show, but for now I want to kind of get you guys are in the industry. What's happening in your kind of Dubai foodie world at the moment? Josh, I know you're opening obviously El Mustacho's next couple of weeks, but have you been anywhere interesting recently? Have you tried any dishes you want to shout about?
No, I've been so focused on work at the moment.
That's the irony of chefs, isn't it?
That's the irony of this business, that it's sort of all consuming, especially when you have a few things on the go. Then it's actually taken me away from Bistro probably more than I would have liked, but this is the natural evolution. As you know, I was there pretty much 24/7. So that's probably been really my main focus, is trying to balance that, keeping Bistro as it always should be, and that a lot of it, comes from me. But also then trying to balance the other side of the job, which is getting everything open and sorted out. So
why did you choose JLT for the new opening? It's becoming a real foodie hub. We had Vietnamese foodies on last week. We've got Pitfire on in a couple of weeks. And it feels like it's become a real hotbed for startups and independents.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great location as far as that. You know, it's a sort of an enclave. It's a captive audience. You have commercial and you have residential. So you have a bit of both. So what has happened is, We are actually opening a new bistro in JLT as well, and I've partnered.
Domination, West Dubai.
slowly, but the two came together in a fortuitous way. I met a great guy who's now my business partner for these sites. He had them available, and we worked out that we really wanted to bring bistro to JLT, and then the other one was we had another site which had great potential, and then it was like, what concept do we see in a market where, you know, it's especially in the evening, it's heavily reliant on delivery. So what works? And so then we decided to bring a Mexican concept along, and then Isaac here I've known for years and years and years.
Me
so
is too. It,
right.
So Isaac, what do you think is going to make El Mostacho different?
Okay, I think El Mostacho have a huge potential because, of course, we will do what we know how to do, authentic food, and make the people live the experience. You know, it's about the good food and it's about the good experience. I mean, when you try one taco, I want you really feel like you are eating on Mexico tacos.
So this isn't the kind of the Tex-Mex. This is going to be proper.
No, it's going to be Mexican food. And I don't like these some sort of terms that are coined, street food, this, that. Because what is it? I mean, it's what we're trying to do is just serve Mexican food, not Tex-Mex, not any other title attached to it. And that's why I went straight to Isaac, because I wanted someone genuine. And that's really what the whole focus is, to not gentrify it, not play with it too much, and just actually serve the people what the Mexicans eat, because okay. It's good food. It's really good food,
and it's been around a long time for good reason.
Right.
So we'll be trying some of that later in the show. Now, James, you're a family man as well. You go out with your little one and your wife. Is anywhere new cafes you've been trying recently, or what have you been enjoying on the foodie scene?
There's nowhere particularly new that I've come across that's been amazing or anything like wow. But there's always a Mythos in JLT, which is my personal favourite. So my sister's actually in town at the minute. So this weekend we will be making a visit to Mythos. The service is great, the food is great there.
It's a great atmosphere. And you don't feel like you're in Dubai at all, which I always feel like you shouldn't really say, because it sounds like, you know, it's a measure of, oh, it's not, you don't feel like in Dubai, it's fantastic. But it is that real escapism of Mythos. It's like a little mini holiday whenever you go there.
Yes, I mean, we go there all the time and it's faultless. It's always really good. So I'm going to have to be a little bit careful because I'm on a very strict diet at the minute.
Are you? Why are you on a strict diet?
Well, because healthy eating is the way forward,
you
right?
Keep on eating the leftovers.
Yeah, something like that. So, I'm doing a little thing with the Project DXB at the minute. They're doing a project on me.
Are you going to be a makeover?
I am the project. So I've got an 8-week body transformation. So
I feel like we should take a photo now and have you on in a couple of months.
All the photos will be there. You'll see them. They're all on Instagram. If you go on the Project DXB, you'll see me there. There's my story, the whole thing from the beginning to the end.
Oh, okay.
So you can see my love handles decreasing as we go along.
Hopefully.
Fingers crossed anyway, as long as I stick to it.
And Sally, you're always at the market the weekend.
Yes.
And I just said to you, oh, did you go to this open? You're like, no, I prefer to eat at home. But I feel like you are very much plugged into the Dubai foodie scene. Any tips and tricks or go-tos for us?
Yeah, I mean, I do like to eat at other people's houses, to be honest. That relaxed atmosphere and, care and attention to detail. You know, it's with...
not
of
my house.
A phrase, you know, with love, but, you know, it's just relaxed. But, I went to Asia de Cuba this week, which was really excellent.
This is the new place that's replaced China Grill at the Westin.
I really enjoyed that.
What was
say.
On the menu that you liked?
There was a raw tuna taco kind of thing with Bloody Mary sauce. That was excellent. And there's some other dishes which are superb. Actually going to Ashes tonight, which is a real blast from the past. Absolutely. My daughter's vegan, she's in town. Well, both of them are, but one's in town, so we have to eat where we can have a vegan option, and that's pretty good. I've been in Dubai for 18 years, been to Ashes for 18 years.
Wow.
And it's just a staple, affordable. It's very nice. And I tend to go out to cafes in the day. In fact, I was in Bistro yesterday. I live in Umm Sukim 2. There's all sorts of little openings.
Well, I was just saying,
Umm
before we
too.
Came on air, I went to a place called Mamesh. Yeah. It's opened literally walking distance from your house. It's on kind of Al Thania and Al Wasl, and it's Palestinian food. And so it's all filled breads and mince and cheese on what looks like almost like a pizza base that's folded in, fresh salads, and super affordable.
Yeah. And there's down the other end of Thania, I always forget the name of it, but it's like a Balkan
I think
place.
It's called like Bistro 21 or something
21
like that.
21 Grams, which is 21 Seoul grams, or something. Yeah. And there's a little cafe called Nostalgia, which just does coffee, and that's very nice. All sorts of little places within walking distance.
That's what we like. Good stuff. Well, if you've got any tips for us, do get in touch, 400-01. And equally, if you know any hot cross buns that Sally should be trying, what have you already tried?
I've tried the ones from Spinneys, the Fine Fair brand. I've tried Marks and Spencer's. Trying to get my hands on some Jones, the grosser ones, and Lime Tree, I believe. But if you know any other ones, but yeah, as I say, Baker and Spice are my faves
the
so far.
Front runner so far. Yeah. So if we've had a bit of chat about Dubai, but how about some of this?
The latest food news.
Now we're coming up to Easter, and of course, Godiva has had to throw its hat into the chocolate pool. They have made, this is in the London outpost of Godiva, so Belgian chocolate brand, really famed for working with royalty. It's an Easter egg that costs £5,000. That's about 25,000 dirhams. More. Almost 26,000 dirhams. And you can imagine, I'm holding a photo up for the panel now, it's elaborate. It's covered in icing. It's covered in Belgian dark chocolate and then gold dust, of course, for it is, you know, expensive. White chocolate pearls. And this has been created by their new creative development chef called Cherish Finden, who's very well known in the UK. She did the Bake Off Creme de la Creme spin-off. And it's her first time in this role. So she wanted to make a bit of a splash. So let me tell you about it. It's 25 kilos. It's accompanied by five 420 gram smaller artisan handcrafted eggs. And it's currently on show. You can see it at London's boutique on Regent Street. It took 192 hours to complete, adorned with edible gold dust and white chocolate pearls. And it comes from the Belgian royalty. What? £5,000? If I was spending that, I'd want a car. Is that fair to say?
Or no, not gold dust. I want gold jewellery.
Yes.
Wouldn't you?
You want to open it and just be like a treasure chest that a pirate would, you know, present to you.
Definitely.
Josh, think about a way to spend your money?
Yes. I have a real issue with things like this because the food waste issues we have in the world, the lack of supply, I don't like food being made for show. I like food being made to eat. Yeah. Because anything else I think is... It's just the way the world is at the moment. It's just not the right direction to take with food. And I have just a really personal thing that I have about wastage of food and whatnot. And it's not getting any better. So
no, it's
things
not.
Like this.
I think it's a really pertinent point, obviously, with Ramadan coming up and the kind of the buffet idea. Yeah, you're absolutely right. When Bistro does Ramadan, you do iftar, it's plated, right?
So we generally try and go down a sort of more a la carte route. So, you know, that we...
To avoid just that.
Yeah, we really try and waste as little as possible.
It's also really interesting, this kind of, it costs £5,000, because it's very hard to actually put a number on these things. Obviously, you've got market value of ingredients. You've got, I suppose, you can work out labour costs if it took 192 hours. But really, it's people going, oh, you know, it's a 10,000 dirham burger. Well, is it really? You know, it might be the finest Wagyu. It might be a chef who, you know, charges X amount for his time. But... It's only ever worth what someone's willing to pay, right?
I think it's a PR stunt to make it more.
Well, let's not give it any more airtime then, Sally. Put it aside.
I agree with you on the food waste wholeheartedly.
Now, Sally, you're a big dinner party fan. James, you're a great dinner party chef. And when we come back, we're going to be talking about the new rules of dinner parties. I've got a brilliant food panel with me. I've got Josh Benson, who's the man behind Bistro and In the Park, a new Mexican eatery, El Mustache, which is opening soon in JLT. And he is here with Chef Isaac. Chef James Hitchens is here, founder of Hitchens Kitchen. He's a personal chef, culinary consultant. And Sally Prosser is here of My Custard Pie, one of the region's most trusted and admired food and travel bloggers. And they've all brought me food, so I'm very, very happy. Now, Sally, you're a big dinner party fan. James, you're a great dinner party chef. What's the biggest dinner party you've catered recently?
Last Friday, I did a dinner party for 30 guests, sit down, canapes on arrival, and then a three-course meal, which was really, really, really nice.
How long would the prep take for that? That gives me hives just thinking about it.
No, I mean, you get the prep is done the day before and leading up to it if it's an evening event. So because obviously my company is solely me at the minute.
That's what I'm going to say. It's just you cooking for 30
odd
people.
Yeah, we launched in January and it's solely me to start with. I have my wife that helps me with my admin because that's not my preferred thing I like to do.
It's not how your time is best spent.
No, they're definitely not. More than half an hour on a computer and I get stressed out. So, but this dinner party was done. Luckily for me, the host set up the whole garden themselves. It almost looked like a wedding scene. It was absolutely immaculate. So,
what did they eat?
They had scallops to start with, and then they had lamb belly for main course. and then followed by like a deconstructed lemon meringue pie with a little shot of something lemony.
So you dropped it. That's what I was over-deconstructed.
Yeah, well, that's what Massimo did.
It
right?
is and exactly got away with it. The deconstructed.
I think if you're cooking for two, you might as well cook for 20.
I do.
It's as easy as that.
More the merrier when for a dinner party.
Quite right. But dinner party rules seem to be changing. I think the years gone by, and certainly in the UK where it was the 70s and 80s, it was a formal sit-down. And, you know, you'd have the glasses would be all laid out and you'd tell people where to sit to engineer kind of sparkling conversations. I feel like that's shifted a bit. And there has been an article that's recently come out talking about the new rules of dinner parties. And culturally, I'd like to get everyone's opinion on this one. Now, clock watching says when someone tells you to arrive at 7:30, the last thing they want you to do is arrive at 7:30. They will be in the shower or at the shop on an emergency capers run. Give it 15 minutes. I am so with this. My husband is pathologically punctual. We went to a dinner party a few months ago where they were like, come at 8. And I was like, okay, well, we'll leave home at 8. And he's like, no, they said 8. What happens? We get there. She's not changed. He's cooking. Nothing's ready. We have to sit awkwardly on their sofa for 15 minutes until they're actually ready to greet people. Josh, what's your take?
Yes, I have an interesting take being married to an Italian lady. So the 7:30 prince might be 9:30.
It's just a suggestion.
Right, that's getting in the shower at home at 7:30. Where being an Australian, we are more 7:45. Well, for me, you sort of banged it on the head there, and that's when I'd expect to land. But we have the opposite thing where I'm trying to get out, not to be too late, not to be on time. On time is not an option.
Okay, Sally, where are you at on this?
I'm your husband.
Are you?
And he's you. Yeah, I get twitchy. Not early, because that is awful. If you've got guests coming and someone's, you think, oh, what, 7:25?
Just walk around the block or sit in the car for a little bit.
I usually say 7:30 for 8, and so that gets people, you know, they come in that half hour or at 8 o'clock. I think that's, but yeah, I get twitchy. And this is Dubai, everyone's late.
Everyone's late. James, are you a pathologically punctual man?
Yeah, I have to be on time. I suppose it stems from working as a chef. You know, my chef used to tell me if I turned up on time, I was 5 minutes late. So for me, I have to be on time.
It's ingrained in you now.
And if you, I mean, you turn up at 7:30 and your host still isn't ready, they're running around like a fool, everything's not quite ready yet, that's when they need to come to me.
Do you start topping for them?
Because I will get you.
You'd be a great person to have early. I'd be like, right, James, I'm going to just get ready. If you could just finish off this prep for the
exactly.
starter.
Or we can teach you how to be ready for a dinner party. So you learn, and I can prep everything with you. We can go through all the plate ups, and then on the night, you're completely set, ready to go,
no stress,
and it's just, and then you have fun.
Here's a question. When do you expect to be fed? So let's say you arrive at 8. I would hope to be fed by 9 because I get a bit hungry. The general rule needs to be guests expect to be fed within 2 hours of arrival. If you work slowly in the kitchen, factor that in. If you have a room of hungry people, they all have knives. But I think we've all been at dinner party going, okay, can we just have some pretzels and can you just put some crisps out because I am starving. So I think that's an interesting one. Now, marriage counselling is here. So don't bring up the conversation / argument you've had with your spouse at the dinner table in front of other people and ask them to try and settle it for you. So try and not tap into simmering tension of other couples around the table. We have something called WIB, which I suggest to all married people out there. And it stands for words in bed, which means if he says something I don't agree with, I just kind of look at him and smile and go, WIB, which means we're going to be fine now, but when we get home,
you're in trouble.
You're getting an earful. And it's an evening saver. So I strongly advise you all take the lesson of WIB. Now, you guys, chefs, you got your fridges. How do you feel about someone going in and, you know, kind of maybe popping something in here or taking something out of there? And no, you're shaking your head, Josh.
No, I'm shaking my head because I have no issue. I mean, that's Australian hospitality. It's like,
help yourself.
I don't want to get you something out of the fridge, especially if I know you well enough. If, you know, if you're considered a friend, then, you know, there's the fridge. I'm doing something. You know, if I'm cooking or whatever, help yourself. But again, that's another conflict in my house where the Italian side is the opposite, that everything should be done for you and no one, you know, should see the heart of house or anything that's going on. It should all be looked after. So
be a guest.
Yeah. It's always fun in my house, you know.
you can't cook Whip. And serve all the beverages,
right?
And so, that's the thing. Yeah, there's the fridge if you want to.
Yeah, well, normally my husband does food and I do drinks, so that tends to work in everyone's favor. What about music?
Oh, it has to be. There has to be music on.
What kind of music is on in your house, James?
It depends on my mood, really. If I always like to have something, you know, quite subtle, nothing too out there. You don't want to be having some like, drum and bass music pumping in the background.
Yeah,
and
I'm tapping into that Norwegian death metal that you love so much.
No, exactly. So yeah, something chilled out. You know, a bit of like Fat Freddy's or something like that. That's what I like to put on.
Because I've been to people's houses before and there's been no music.
Oh,
and
no.
It's awful, isn't it?
Yeah, that's bad.
I think dinner party music has always been a bit of a, oh, it's dinner party music. You know, get the Dido on, she's dinner party music. And it's always been a bit of an insult. But there is a nice balance. Yeah.
You got to have music. It's like cafes as well. I can't stand walking into a restaurant that doesn't have music. Yeah. Especially if there's like three customers. It's an awkward experience. And it happened the other night. I went into a place. The food was really nice. A little place in a mall. But it's like, why don't they have any music playing? It's just this silence. And dinner parties are the same, and you should have something going in the background the moment before the guests arrive.
Our best ones have been where we've done Desert Island Discs or your best musicals or something, and everyone plays, and those are the best nights.
Ooh, how do you do that? So you ask people in advance?
Yes, yeah, and they come and you know, you can put everything on Spotify now, can't you?
Well, exactly.
You
know, I mean, yeah. Phones and Bluetooth as well. Everyone's got a Bluetooth speaker in their house, so you can have more fun, and then people can bring their own things to the party.
Yeah.
Now, we're talking about different cultures here. Now, there's been something in the news recently about a chef called Guillaume Ray, who worked in a Vancouver restaurant in Canada on the Pacific coast. And he was fired for being aggressive, rude and disrespectful. And he said his behaviour wasn't out of line. He's just French. Now, as Josh, you're hiring staff, you've worked all over the world. How in tune do you need to be of kind of cultural sensitivities and behaviours?
I don't think that's an excuse. I mean, it's hospitality at the end of the day. It's you need to be hospitable. That argument doesn't fly. And I think there's an example that actually happened in a prominent French restaurant here.
Oh, give us the juice.
A number of years ago, there was a group of us at a table, and it was one of the ladies was French, and the waiter was French. And as soon as that waiter knew she was French, he automatically stopped talking English to the rest of the table and only speak to her in French. And you can imagine, I mean, even she felt awkward because I think she actually said in French, do you mind speaking English? And he refused. And so it made the whole experience quite weird. And it was very early, you know, it was at the order taking time. So we'd only been seated for 10, 15 minutes. So,
Cool.
It wasn't enjoyed by anyone, including the French people in the party.
Not cool. Now, when we come back, we're going to be talking about avocado mania. It's swept the world in the last few years, but shock horror, it's been knocked off the top spot as the UK's fastest selling fruit. But by what? Find out next.
Guess the ingredients.
Sally Prosser is here. She is going to be keeper of the clues this afternoon. To win those vouchers, Sally, give us clue number one.
Clue number one. Today's mystery ingredient has been cultivated in India and China for about 2,500 years and was developed as a cross between two citrus fruits. The Arab Moors first introduced today's mystery ingredient to Spain in the 13th century. Like many other fruits and vegetables, the seeds of today's mystery ingredient were brought to the Americas by Christopher Columbus in his second voyage to the New World in 1493.
If you know what that mystery ingredient is and fancy winning a little bit of dinner, you can message us on the text line. You can get in touch by the Dubai Eye Messenger app. It's free for download on iOS and Android. And then you can message us for free whenever you like, within reason. So if you know what that mystery ingredient is, get in touch to win this afternoon. Now, earlier we were talking about avocados, and Josh's here, Chef Isaac, you're here as well, the chef behind the brand. You're here with your brother, who I'm going to give a quick wave to. Hi. We've got some Mexican madness here in the studio this afternoon. Avocados, Josh, you've got a confession.
I don't like them.
Neither do I.
It's a textural thing for me. I've never, ever been a fan. I don't mind guacamole, but that's about where it starts and finishes for me.
Is there a guac on the El Mustacho menu?
Guac per se, no. There's an agrimole, which is more like a avocado puree.
How's that served, Isaac?
It's we use as a sauce on the tacos, you know. We put it's like avocado with blend onions, coriander, lime juice, a touch of oil. It's perfect for tacos.
So it's thinner, it's more of a sauce.
Yeah, it's a puree sort of texture. You'll have some today, so you can give feedback on it later.
Sally, avocado fan?
I actually had them for breakfast today with a poached egg. Yeah, I love them. Yeah.
Well, it's fair to say that avocado mania has swept the world. We've had people proposing using avocados. We've had avocado Easter eggs we were talking about last week. But they've been knocked off the top spot by another fruit in the UK, and it is pineapple. I know.
You can't get good pineapples in the UK, to be fair. And well, you only realise that when you live here and you get them you know, just on the doorstep.
So it's been avocado has been knocked off the top spot as the UK's fastest selling fruit. There's all sorts of kind of reasons behind it, apparently. People looking for vitamin C.
But it is quite a polarising fruit. It surprises me, that one, because
really
people either
odd.
Love it or hate it. There's no, it's not a tomato, which is generally accepted. It's
It's not an apple that you'd always have a few apples in the fruit bowl at home.
It's a strange one.
It is a strange one.
They're a faff to prepare as
they
well.
They are a faff.
Yeah, my daughter said, you know, have you seen those sort of swirly things that you can
like a twisty Cora
turn?
Almost.
Yeah, she said, oh, why would I only have them if I have that implement? Because they're too much of a faff.
Need a gadget. Yeah. We're getting some guesses in on text line on 4001 from Mystery Ingredient. And Othman has asked more detail on the Palestinian eatery. It's called Mamaesh, so it's M-A-M-A and then apostrophe E-S-H. And it's on Al Wasl, kind of in the Al Manara, Al Thania area. And yeah, delicious, really kind of filled breads and salads and super, super affordable as well. So yeah, there you go, a little foodie tip from us. Ooh, Chef James of Hitchens Kitchens is handing over some food. I think we've just been given a roast butternut squash, quinoa, kale, pomegranate and feta salad. So we'll be tucking into that shortly. Now, I know, Josh, I'm not going to ask you this question because you don't like avocados. But Sally, what's your favourite way to eat an avocado?
With the poached egg on top? No.
Yeah, so would you poach, crack an egg into it and poach it?
No,
that way, just poach it and drop it on top.
Just poach it, and with a nice sourdough toast, I really like that. I like a bit of lime juice or something sharp with it. I think that's good. But I really like the sound of your aguamole.
Aguamole.
Because I really like loads of lime juice with mine. I think you need something on it.
You need the acidity
to
cut through.
Yeah, lovely.
Now, James, I'm going to ask you to sit down, stop serving us for just a second. We've got some salads put in front of us. Oh, he's dishing out. It smells amazing. What have we got?
All right, so you've got a quinoa, shredded kale, feta, roast butternut squash, pine nuts in there, there's pumpkin seeds in there. So it's super, super healthy.
Super healthy.
The dressing is made out of a simple kind of Greek-style dressing, which is one part apple cider vinegar, three parts olive oil, salt and pepper, garlic, lemon juice, a few herbs in there, so some oregano and some thyme.
This is seriously tasty. Mm. I know. I wish you could see Sally's face. It's like a How far in advance could you prep this, do you think, James?
Oh, you can have it prepped and in the fridge, and it can last for 3 days as long as you don't dress it. So you dress it last minute, and then you're good to go. So today I brought in two dishes from one of our packages, which is the Healthy Eats package. And I brought two dishes from the Good to Great package. So these are from the Healthy Eats.
And how did you make the kale digestible? Because it's not obvious in there. I mean, I really like kale, but for me, it needs to be cooked.
You just need to cut it very fine. Mm. So you can buy the bags in Spinneys, the pre-shredded stuff. So you just buy it. You don't have to chop it even.
Convenient food.
Or shred your own from the farm.
We're all about making food easy and accessible. You know, it's not about making life too difficult.
There's another trick if you want to eat it raw is... which I don't know if you never noticed, we used to call it massage kale on the menu, because you take rock salt and you rub the kale, and then you rub it, and so you massage it in, and it softens the whole texture of the kale. So that's a way to have it raw in a salad without cooking it, and then obviously you discard the salt. But
this would be great as a side as well if you did some kind of grilled skewers, kind of add some more protein to it. Isaac, you're having a...
Oh, it's fabulous. Okay. It's not Mexican, but it's nice.
It's not Mexican, but it's nice. I think we can't say better than that. Please. Now, we want to treat someone to a bit of a cooking lesson with you as well, James.
Yep.
But we need to get some advice from you, basically. We are asking you this afternoon, what's the best bit of advice you got for cooking? It could have been from a chef, from your parent, from a friend. And if you can tell us your best cookery tip, could be a gadget, could be a way of storing food, could be a way of choosing ingredients, you could be winning a cookery lesson with Hitchens Kitchens by sharing that tip. The best tip I got was from my mum. And I do say this is probably the best bit of life advice she gave me. She might not agree. Was just using a little bit of sugar when cooking with tomatoes. That's all she's ever done.
Balance that flavour.
Balance it out. Josh, you know I'm going to ask you for your best cookery tip.
Ooh, you put me on the spot
I know.
My best cookery tip would be, I think cooking is about personality. I don't like cooking sweet ingredients or cakes or whatnot because I'm not a scientifically calculated person. I like to go with the flow. I like to do things organically. So I much prefer cooking savory where you don't have to have exact measurements. And I would say your personality type will dictate where you will best perform in a kitchen. That would probably be my advice.
Okay. James?
For me, it's to, and I always implement this in any chef that I've ever worked with, is never panic. Because as soon as panic sets in and you get stressed out, anything starts going wrong. So if you can be calculated and then and everything can be, take it easy, relaxed, no stress, then it will come out in your food and you'll have great food.
Sally, you're looking so thoughtful there.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of advice I've been given. I mean, the thing I try to stick to is I think your cooking is based on the ingredients. And for me, that's the freshest. And I think local it works for that. That, you know, if you've got taste in the ingredients already, you don't have to do too much for it. I think my mum probably brought me up to be really economical, so never waste food. So, yeah, leftover bread, we always had it in bread and butter pudding, you know, things like that. I never waste food. I suppose that's the thing. And you can make it into delicious things. So,
okay,
yeah.
So if you want to share your bit of cookery advice so we can all learn something this afternoon, do get in touch. You can use the Dubai Eye Messenger app or text us. Share your advice and you could be winning a cookery lesson with Hitchens Kitchens. Now, we're getting some messages here on hot cross buns, Sally.
Ooh, tell me.
Lottie says, Marks and Spencer's luxury hot cross buns are to die for.
Well,
so that's one to pick up.
I've had those, yeah. I've tasted those.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Good.
Pretty okay. good.
Pretty good. What out of 10 on the my custard pie test?
Well, I haven't tasted them all yet.
Okay.
I'm going to probably put something on my blog.
You
so,
will.
Yeah.
Will you do a feature on hot cross bun tastings?
I think I will, yes.
Interesting. So, in my previous life on a magazine, we did tastings for almost every season. So we would do mince pie tastings, hot cross bun tastings, and Baker and Spice came at top on our list for hot cross buns. I think Lime Tree won the mince pies, if memory serves. But talking about all things sweet, just want to ask you, which country do you think consumes the most chocolate per head per year? Any guesses, Josh?
Belgium.
Good guess, James.
The States?
That would be my guess as well, Sally.
I think it's Switzerland, isn't it?
No, it's the UK.
Oh, right.
Believe it or not, most people, obviously a lot of people love chocolate. Apparently the Brits love it the most, with over 8 kilos eaten per person per year.
Wow. That's a lot of chocolate.
So, yes, just be mindful of this. They're an also increasing rate. They're consuming chocolate more and more. It's gone up by 23% on the Easter egg consumption on last year.
Oh, God.
Wow. I think it's maybe because they're going into the shops earlier as well. It seems like, you know, as soon as Christmas is over, the eggs appear and then I've got to kind of drag my three-year-old away from all of the shelves. It's easier to keep her at home, I think, to be honest. But yeah, so a little bit of trivia. Who doesn't love a little bit of trivia? What's your best gadget in the kitchen, James? What do you like using?
Temperature probe.
Oh.
Because it's all about precision, and if you're going to cook something and make sure it's perfect, if you've got a really good temperature probe, then there's, you know, there's no room for error. If you know your temperatures, then it'll always come out right.
Okay. Gadgets?
One of everything. My that's what I...
In a perfect
world.
No,
I don't think you get to do that.
No, that's what I have. I mean, my kitchen is... people that come around to my house are quite shocked the amount of stuff I have, because it's always when there is quite often one thing you need to do, perform one task. And especially if you're cooking for friends coming around for a dinner party when you have no time, that I have about four drawers just stacked of pretty much everything a commercial kitchen would have.
Yeah, you don't do your own washing up, do you?
Sometimes. It depends how the morning is.
Isaac, what was there a gadget you brought over from Mexico when you moved to Dubai, or something that you're really missing from Mexico?
Yes. A small tortilla machine.
Small tortilla machine?
Yeah.
Does it? What does it do? How does it roll them out?
It's like a press. It's like a press machine only. And it's very useful right here, really, because we cannot find good tortillas in Dubai. We have to make our own.
So you brought the tortilla roller. It's in the country?
Yeah.
Oh, it's an integral part of what we're doing. We need a good one. because everything is made in house. So.
What does it look like? Is it big, small?
Well, I mean, there's different ones. There's one you can have little cast iron ones, which are like just a flat press. They're
like
the
a
ones,
waffle kind of situation.
Yeah, which is what he's talking about because it's what the, you know when you're cooking at home. But then you get there's ones that like chabatti makers that style. There's ones that come roll in from the side and would automate it. So there's a number of different ways depending on the volume you're doing.
Sally, you've got a favorite kitchen gadget?
Has to be a really good knife. And going to someone else's kitchen and cooking in the kitchen when they have those little fiddly awful knives that aren't sharp. I'm thinking about my mother-in-law's kitchen. But it's the worst, isn't it?
Or you have this set of cheap knives that are all blunt.
That kills me.
Yes, true.
When we come back, we're going to be talking about some record money being spent on TV advertising in the foodie world and the cheesiest pizza ever. I've got a great foodie panel with me this afternoon. Josh Benson is here. He's the man behind Bistro and In the Park, a new Mexican eatery, El Mustacho, which is opening in JLT over the next couple of weeks. And we're getting a sneak peek and eat of some of those dishes that are going to be on the menu. He's here with Chef Isaac, who is getting some food ready for us right now. Sally Prosser is here of My Custard Pie, one of the region's most beloved food and travel bloggers, who is an absolute must-follow for beautiful images and really insightful information. Thanks, guys, and thank you for bringing in some food, both of you. I'm looking forward to all of it, quite frankly. Also joined by Chef James Hitchens, who has already fed us a beautiful butternut squash, quinoa, kale, pineapple, pomegranate and feta salad, and he's whipping up a fish dish right now. Now, Sally, tell me, do you watch Bake Off? Do you watch The Great British Bake Off?
I do, yes.
You're watching the new series on Channel 4?
Intermittently.
You're making
not
a face
grabbed.
There.
Yeah, not grabbed by the celebrity one, you mean?
Well, all of it.
Yeah,
there is a stand-up to cancer one at the moment. I think the word celebrity has been used a bit fast and loose there. Yeah, I think I recognise maybe one out of four on each show.
I think I have an issue with the way it's going at the moment because I think it's not really, it's about creation. It's almost about ingredients and baking as almost an art form rather than to eat. I think they look and they're full of colour. They look these monstrous things and they don't. My friend, who was a judge on the Belgian one.
Oh, I didn't realise I had it.
And it was absolutely beautiful. You know, baskets made of bread, but no colour and things like that. I think it's lost the plot in the UK.
It's moved away a bit.
Controversially.
No, well, no, it's a fair comment. Josh, you watching it at home?
No, I'm more of a Netflix fan. I'm more of an ugly, delicious sort
That's
the sort of thing
I
watch.
That's really good, yeah. That is a great show.
I don't have any terrestrial sort of, I don't even have any terrestrial TV anymore. I just have...
All about the Netflix.
Online and Netflix, so... But I think a lot of these shows, I mean, MasterChef, all these ones are the same. They start with a great formula that really resonates, and then they just over-elaborate, and they just think they have to take it further and further and sort of lose sight of what made it good.
Yeah, and often lose the people that tuned in initially for that, as you say, that kind of pure baking joy. Mm. And now, as you say, it seems to be a lot more about how it looks rather than how it tastes. But it is undeniably doing really, really well. The big move from BBC to Channel 4 last year, and a lot of people were giving a bit of slating, saying it's going to lose the magic, you're losing Mary Berry, da-da-da. But it's actually doing very well. The final of the last series attracted Channel 4's second biggest audience ever, 11 million people. And, wait for it, Netflix is talking to them about putting all seven series, back series, on to Netflix. But Amazon has just spent £5 million on sponsoring Bake Off. It was a big deal. Everyone was saying, oh, there could be a bit of a bargain happening here when they moved over to Channel 4 and Dr. Oggis and Lyle's Golden Syrup were the two big sponsors, and apparently they got a bargain price of £2 million, but based on the new figures, £5 million. And apparently Amazon's gonna be pushing its Echo speakers and all Alexa kind of virtual assistant stuff. That's who they're targeting, because the audience is much younger than I thought. Tends to be 16 to 34 year olds who are loving it, who are very much then plugged into that world.
So you say to the Echo, at the commercial break, make me a cup of tea then.
Pass me the chocolate. I think it's pretty much impossible to watch Bake Off without something sweet. And it totally worked on me last night. I was watching it and I had a slice of toast with golden syrup on it. I mean, if that's not directly acting on advertising, I don't know what is. Now, pizza fan, Josh?
Yes.
What's your favourite topping?
Probably a good Italian classic margarita, I'll be honest.
But done really well.
With the capers and these sort of things through the actual mix to give it that little saltiness.
Oh, yum. Your wife's Italian?
Yeah.
Does she do much Italian cooking at home?
No.
He said bitterly.
But I have a mother-in-law who, when I travel to Italy, generally between two and sort of four times a year, that's when I get my fix, because she just puts on the most amazing spreads. So
Lucky
I eat
you.
Like a king when I go there.
Come back about 4 kilos, have you?
Yeah, but it's that balance. I have quite healthy food, so, and it's quite an active life, and because she's from Tuscany, so you're always out and about and you're always doing things. So you don't eat, you know, you eat good food, you eat healthy food, ingredient driven food.
Yeah.
And so there's actually, it's actually quite healthy for her. I mean, that Mediterranean diet, it's spoken about a lot.
Yeah. Tried and tested.
Yeah.
Now, a Berlin restaurant. Now, I have to say, my first thought was, oh, are the Germans that well known for their pizza? They've created the world's cheesiest pizza containing, wait for it, 111 different cheeses. Cringing there, Sally.
I mean, just you, the way you led into the segment there pretty much summed it up.
Yeah. When I thought about this, thinking the pizza must be enormous, but actually what they've done, it's only a little bit bigger than a regular sized pie, but they're using really, really, really small amounts of it. And it's actually got itself into the Guinness Book of Records. 111 different types of pizza. Highlights include, oh, crikey, there's a lot of pizza. I'm not going to read out all the cheeses because frankly,
they're all there.
Mozzarella. Yeah, exactly. It must be. Leicester Serrat is on there. Comté Raclette is on there as well. So they've really, really gone for it. Now, I've just had a message on from Basque saying, Helen, second clue for our mystery ingredient, please. Do you know what? Go on then.
Guess the ingredient.
So India is the world's largest producer of today's mystery ingredient, who produce 3,000 tons of the ingredient every year. The tree for today's mystery ingredient is a heavy feeder and will quickly deplete the soil around it, in the ground or in a container. They need a lot of water and cannot tolerate temperatures much under 50 degrees Fahrenheit. I don't know what that is in centigrade, but they are.
To Google it. So if you know what our mystery ingredient is this afternoon, you could be winning a voucher to spend at El Mesteto, which is opening in JLT, the new Mexican eatery, in a couple of weeks. So you're going to have to wait, but it will absolutely be worth it. Brian has sent in 12 guesses. Brian, I'm not going to read them out, but I can tell you're not quite there yet. So keep on guessing. Chef James Hitchens is just serving us what looks like a beautiful piece of salmon with some potatoes and some mini broccoli as well. We'll be trying that when we come back. We're also going to be talking about some of Dubai's most delicious new eateries. Now, James, just quickly tempt us. What's in front of us?
So you've got crispy skin sea bass with herb new potatoes, and then asparagus, tender stem broccoli with brown butter, garlic and cashews, which you'll find on our Good to Great package.
Now, the cashews, that was an unexpected one for me. Tell me, I don't think of nuts necessarily belonging on that plate, but does it work?
Well, when you toast off, the way we do it is we toast off the nuts in the pan, and then we add the butter to that, and it gives it a really, really nice little extra flavour. So when you brown butter anyway, you get a nutty flavour. Adding the cashews to it, you get an extra nutty flavour. So, and it's just a really nice extra element of texture to the plate as well.
Mmm, loving this crispy skin. Sally, I think you're a mouthful ahead of me.
No, I've only tasted the potatoes, which are delicious. Really good.
How do you prepare the potatoes, James?
Very simply. They're boiled from cold in salted water and then let them come down to temperature naturally. Don't try and cool them in cold water.
What would happen if you did?
Oh, they tend to split up, and a new potato works really well if you then just let it cool down by itself. Cut them lengthways in half and then chuck them in a pan with a load of butter and extra herbs, parsley, coriander, some spring onions, some chives, loads of salt and pepper. Give it a good toss around.
What do you cook the fish in terms of oil or butter?
Well, when you're cooking a skin, you want to kind of render it down, but it's going to get to a fairly high temperature. So I like to cook it with like a rapeseed oil. The rapeseed oil handles heat quite well. Olive oil, if you take it too high a temperature, it's got a low burning temperature, so then it becomes slightly bitter, which you don't want to get. So yeah, like a rapeseed oil is really good. It's a good alternative to your bog standard veg oil.
Really good. Josh, have you got a mouthful?
No, I'm a broccolini fan, so you could serve me just a plate of broccolini. I'd be happy. A really good tip for broccolini.
Tell me.
Broccoli in generally is char it over charcoal, over a flame. Mm.
You could just do it on your gas hob.
Yeah, exactly. But it just gives this amazing flavour to it.
Yeah, very good.
I love it.
Oh, love it. Sally, you look very happy as well.
Yeah, I really like the slight crunchy, but not too crunchy, green vegetables. They're really fresh and, yeah, lovely. Have you put butter on them?
Yes.
Yes. That's good too.
That's always a chef tip. Yeah. That's always a chef tip. It's just Just add butter. If in doubt, add a bit.
Everything
more
in moderation.
Butter.
Right, the other 6 days of the week. You don't, but when you're doing a dish that needs it, it needs it.
Exactly. Who but are we to deny nature?
Isn't butter the new olive oil in health terms, though?
Yeah. Yes.
It's meant to be a good fat, isn't it, too?
Yeah, right.
So.
No stick complaints away from margarine.
From me. Now, when we come back, we're going to be trying some more dishes, including some from El Mustacho, which is JLT's newest eatery, not even open yet. I've got Josh Banson here, the man behind Bistro, a new Mexican eatery, El Mustacho. It's opening in JLT in hopefully a short few weeks. I'm sure paperwork depending, you know what it can be like. Chef James Hitchens is here, the founder of Hitchens Kitchens. He's a personal chef, culinary consultant, whose days can include teaching people, cooking for people, consulting people. He's a very, very busy man. And Sally Prosser is here of My Book Custard Pie, one of the region's most trusted and beloved food and travel blogs. Thanks, guys. Now, we've just been trying some of your dishes, Chef James. Beautiful fish, really lovely crunchy broccoli with that nice bite, herby potatoes. I'm pretty sure I've got some in my teeth, so thank goodness this is radio. And we've got some protein balls there. What? So how do you make your protein balls?
So these are dates, almonds and coconut protein balls. They're very simple to make, but one of the things I'm trying to do at the minute is kind of labour on the healthy eating side of things. So our healthy eating package has these dates on them. So what we do is it's pretty much in a food processor, soft pitted dates. You've got unsweetened cocoa powder, unsweetened coconut, shredded coconut. There's a protein powder which you can buy in Spinneys, which is actually from Bob's Red Mill, which is a natural protein.
He was here a few months ago.
Was he?
Yeah.
Brilliant.
Bob was there signing books in Spinneys. Very nice man.
I bet he is.
Great beard.
So yes, you can buy that in Spinneys, and that's actually got probiotics in it and chia seeds in it, which is a really good one. You chuck that in there and then basically give it all a big blitz, and then 4 tablespoons of boiling water just to amalgamate it all together so it comes nice and sticky. Roll it in your hands, chuck it in some more extra coconut, and then job done. So it's very fast, very easy.
This sounds like a good thing to make with kids, actually.
Yeah, kids will take it. And I think making kids more in tune with healthy food and giving them something sweet that they can eat, when instead of going for the bar of chocolate or the bag of Haribo, they have something in their lunchbox that they can eat, which I think once you try it, you'll see that it does definitely hit the sweet tooth.
And you could take out the almonds if it was going to be lunchbox friendly. They seem to have quite a lot of restrictions here on lunchboxes, understandably, in terms of allergies. So it could be adapted, really, depending on likes, dislikes and allergies.
100%.
As well.
I'm kind of working on a range of protein balls at the minute. We're doing a collaboration with Project DXB.
They're going to be shredding you.
They're going to be shredding me, yeah. So they're based out of Evolution Fitness in JLT. And we're going to be doing some lesson packages with them for their clients or anybody else who's interested in learning more about healthy eating. Jack and Anna, the founders, they're going to be at the beginning of the lesson. They'll be coming in, giving you all your macronutrients, you know, how many grams of carbohydrates are in an apple, your portion sizes. And then we're going to go over to me and I'm going to make it all nice and fun and exciting, and how to make, you know, healthy food doesn't have to be boring, and how to make it easy and quick. So, these are going to feature on there, and I'm doing a range of different protein balls.
And if you would like to win a cookery lesson with Chef James Hitchens, he is right here this afternoon offering up some advice, but we would like you to share your advice as well. Got some great suggestions here. Yannick saying, best advice, know where ingredients come from and spend the money on your knives. Sally, a man after your own heart. Mika saying, my kitchen item is sorted cutting boards, plastic for raw chicken, wood for most other things, and a separate one for onions and garlic. Oz saying, best advice was given from a French friend, works for me every time, put a dash of honey into the pancake mix, it gives the pancakes a great golden colour and taste. And Charlie, a great one for any chef, make sure you have a good clean work area before you start. If you'd like to share your best bit of advice, could be a tip you got from your grandmother, it could be a gadget that you can't live without, get in touch, 4001 on the text line, or you can message us on the Dubai Eye Messenger app, totally free. Now, I think we're about to try some food from El Mustacho, which is Josh's new eatery. It's opening in a couple of weeks in Cluster I in JLT. And we would like to treat you to a bit of dinner there too, but you can't just text in and say your name. You're going to have to do this.
Guess the ingredient.
Sally, you are keeper of the clues this afternoon. What's next?
So Clue number three. Today's mystery ingredient has many health benefits and contains flavonoids that have antibiotic effects. In West Africa, the juice of today's mystery ingredient is added to daily meals because it is known to protect against catching cholera. Today's mystery ingredient is also an excellent source of vitamin C.
Now, someone's just messaging going, the clues are pretty difficult. I think you need to give some more. So, more coming up later in the show for your chance to win a nice dinner. We've got dirhams with 500 dirhams with El Mustachio. Now, Chef Isaac is just pouring me some tortilla soup. Josh, can you tell us about the soup?
Well, I mean, it does what it says on the box. It's trying to be very authentic. It's, as you see, it's garnished. It's supposed to be, you know, almost a full meal in one. This is just a small portion version for here.
I love your bowls, by the way.
And
this is what we can expect in the restaurant?
Yes, this is sort of the dine-in stuff, and then we're just finalising all the packaging.
It's beautiful yellow crockery and all and painted. So in here, we've got some strips of tortilla. We've got some crumbled cheese. What cheese is it?
The queso fresco, the classic one that you use. And then it's just the tortillas we make ourselves. We get the flour ones and we shred them and we fry them up and so we they're nice and fresh and crisp.
And is it when it's served in the restaurant, will it be, so it came to us with the bowl with the dry ingredients, for want of a better phrase, with the tortilla there and the cheese, and then the soup is added at the table? Is that how it's going
to
be?
No, this is just for now. It would be served to you like as you see it now. If you take it takeaway delivery, you'll actually get it portioned out, so you would get the soup separate and then all the garnishes
so
separate.
So it doesn't get kind of soggy
exactly.
On
so,
the way.
And then if there's something you like or dislike more than one or the other, you'll have that sort of the power to do what
oh
you want.
Oh my goodness, that's absolutely delicious. There's a really nice spice level to that.
Yeah.
Obviously, it's warming because it's a soup, but there's a nice, gentle spice to it. That will get you over a cold.
Yeah, no, it's a lovely soup. I mean, it's going to be one of our signatures on the menu.
James, you look very happy with this.
It's banging.
What can you taste in it?
Oh, it's just such a rounded flavour. You know, all of the flavours in there work really well together.
How do you make the soup itself? What's in the actual broth?
Oh, I think the Isaac here would probably be better off.
Isaac, come on the mic. Hello, yeah, sir. Tell me.
Okay, this soup, it's honestly, it's a long process, you know. One of the things what is my favorite things for the Mexican food is this soup, you know. It's a long process soup. It's a slow cooking chicken broth with the tomato, dry chilies, smoking chilies. It's difficult to do, to be honest.
How long would it take?
We take around
hours or days?
No, hours.
You never know.
Yeah, of course, of
and,
course.
And we've got some, as I said, strips of. Do you deep fry the tortilla before you?
Yeah,
sprinkle on.
We get them, slice them, and then fry them up so they're nice and crisp.
And what can I see? I don't want to show my ignorance, but what's the black stuff that I can see?
It's a guajillo chili. It's a refried guajillo chili, dry. He give a very nice smoky flavour to the
soup. Yeah, the smoky bit's not too spicy. Sally?
Yeah. Yeah, I think the smoky chilli is the thing that really makes it different.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's hard to put your finger on what the flavour is, but that's what elevates it. And with the creamy, did you say it was cheese? Fresh cheese. And then sour cream.
Yes.
Delicious.
Lovely.
Absolutely delicious. So in Mexico, would you have that kind of starter main dessert type mentality, or is it more of a, you know, have some soup, have some sharing? How do you generally eat?
Normally we eat a lot.
we have
tacos for appetizer, tacos for lunch, and tacos
Are you been doing some breakfast at the restaurant? What time are you planning to open?
Yeah, phase one we're focusing on lunch and dinner. Because we go quite late into the evening. So we're looking at around 11 or 12 o'clock start. But we have breakfast items already tasted and sorted. It's just a matter of
what would be a Mexican breakfast item? Isaac,
we have the traditional huevos rancheros. You know,
that's a big hit in bistro as well. A lot of people love coming for that.
Yeah. Well, we have as well easy takeaways like the burrito breakfast with scrambled eggs, sour cream, cheese, and stuff.
It's good, good kind fantastic. Of morning after food.
Yeah.
Mm. Yes. Fantastic. Producer Joe's also got a bowl of the tortilla. Are you enjoying? It's absolutely lush. It is. Yeah. And actually, when
you said that you were sending through a tortilla soup.
I won't lie, Joe was like, oh.
Wait, yeah, the office kind of went, oh, how odd, but this is absolutely delicious.
Yeah, now the first time I tasted it, I'm like, this is an absolute winner, and this is going to be always showcased, because it's... same with bistro in many ways. I like to sort of under promise and over deliver, and your reaction is exactly that. You're like, what is he bringing me? So yeah.
Oh,
but the depth of flavour and just the smoky depth. Chilies, which I love, it just really,
and the crisp of the tortilla,
yeah.
But the tanginess of the tomato as well, though, that's really what keeps you coming back for more, I think. Lovely.
I'm very, very happy.
I'm going
right
back
now.
Off the mat.
Okay, I'm turning it down so you can eat in peace. No, thank you so much for bringing this in. Because as I said, you've got that tangy of the sour cream, got the tang of the cheese, you've got the warmth of the broth, and that really comforting, you know, the chicken tomato, and the smokiness. I've never actually had anything like it, to be completely honest.
Well, it's Mexican food. As I said, it's not a gentrified or a Tex-Mex version. It's the real deal. So that's all we're trying to achieve.
Could you mind me asking why you chose to do a Mexican cuisine?
Well... partly because of the logistics in play, you know, whenever I had a site available to me and I got together with my executive chef and sort of we went through the different options of what we thought would work there. You know, you
is
have
that
to,
Chris?
Yes.
Chris, who isn't here because we wouldn't be able to get him off the microphone.
He's probably listening, so here, you know.
I love you, Chris, but my days. You can talk. But he's obviously been... great hotel background, working with you for years.
Yeah.
Knows a lot of people, a lot of industries, and a lot of different cuisines as well. So having, not necessarily a business partner, but someone you can bounce ideas off when you're generally a lone restaurateur must be incredibly valuable.
Look, absolutely. I mean, our relationship started as Chris as a customer originally. So he's not my first chef that I had out here. So we were always on the same page. So we were sort of, you know, became a customer, and then if it was a quiet morning, I'd come sit with him and we'd chat. And so we knew that we were on the same page initially. And so when it got to the point where I was looking for a new head chef, it was a bit of a no-brainer for me. I approached him and, you know, I think we talked about a temporary 3-month sort of period to help me transition, and that was 2 years ago thereabouts. So
it's obviously working really well for you.
And he's got such a great, well-rounded experience that he just helps these guys as well, because they come with the raw passion and the knowledge and the, you know, the heritage. And he can just tweak things and just, you know, just have the techniques that can just take it to another level. So
when we come back, we're going to be talking about the challenges that restaurateurs do face here in Dubai, and also trying some tacos, Josh.
Tacos. We have three different types of tacos, and one of them is particularly interesting.
Oh, yeah. Find out more when we come back, because we've just been presented with a trio of nachos from El Mustacho, which is opening in JLT in the next couple of weeks. Now, Chef Isaac is putting out dishes. He's got homemade nachos here. We've got three types of tacos, so we'll be talking about them very quickly. Now, Chef James, your background, when did you start cooking?
I started pretty much straight from school. I never went to college. I went straight into the restaurants. So I've been chefing now for 14 years. Started off in little pubs down in Cornwall, then worked my way up to London, did a few restaurants in London, gastro pubs there. But predominantly, I'm kind of classically trained, like classic French, so European cuisine.
And then you started working on super yachts, as you do.
Yeah, well, basically, I was in London and I was working every hour God sends, as you can imagine. And at the end of the month, when I paid all my bills, I had about 100 quid left in my pocket. And my dream has always been to open my own restaurant. So I kind of thought to myself, like, what can I do to earn some more money? And the super yachts seemed to be crying out to me. I had a couple of mates that are in the industry. They said, James, come and do it, give it a crack. So I jumped into that and I did it for a good few years and made a few pennies, and that's what actually brought me over to Dubai. Yeah.
And now, as you said, culinary consultant, working as a personal chef and also teaching people how to cook.
Yeah.
So you know your food, right?
Yeah, I know about my food. Predominantly, at the minute, we launched in January. We do kind of cooking lessons and like cooking lessons, cooking experiences, and then catering for small dinner parties up to kind of about 30, 40 people.
That's not a small dinner party.
Well, it is compared to some of the other companies out here that are catering for like masses and masses. So we do that. And then the culinary consultancy is kind of taken a bit of a back foot as we started. It's not kind of gone as right, it's not set off as much as I thought it was going to. So we're kind of predominantly focusing then on the lessons, the cooking packages and the catering, yeah.
All going well now. Josh, you're back at the mic and Isaac is too. Tell us about these tacos.
So you have three types of tacos in front of you.
Can I just say something really quickly? If you could make this answer really long so I can eat them, that would be amazing. Thank you very much. Okay, you may talk.
Okay, so this is a snapshot of the tacos that we'll be doing. It's not the whole shebang, because obviously Baja fish taco, we need to cook it fresh. So this is sort of a selection. You have one which is more the classic carne asada, which is the steak one. You have the tinga, as it's called, which is the chicken one. And then you have the lingua, which is the tongue one. Yes.
What?
The tongue.
Is that this one here with, looks like pickled vegetables on top?
I believe so.
No.
It's the one that I'm eating right now?
The one with radish on.
Yes, the one you're eating now.
No, I can't see your plate from down here.
Yes.
Okay.
So yes,
tongue is good.
It's a classic. I mean, it's we're trying to respect the classics and you know and introduce something a little bit different.
Well, I'm caught off guard. Yes. As it's a beef tongue, presumably.
Yes, I was watching everyone tuck in before I'd given you a rundown of what is there. But again, I mean, it's just this is the way we're going to be serving our tacos. This is the way they're done normally. The tortillas are homemade. Everything's homemade. Everything's done from scratch. There's no bought ingredients in here.
The nachos. Homemade?
Yes. The same ones that we've been doing. I have a little take-home pack here for you. I thought...
Oh.
We thought nachos don't make the best on-air items to be crunching away into a microphone. So I thought that's part of your pack. So we bought four different types of salsas and some nachos to take home for the weekend.
Oh. What a gent. We're squeezing a bit of a lime on top here. Is this the avocado sauce you were talking about?
Yes.
What is that, Isaac?
It's the agua mole. It's just blending avocado with the coriander, lime juice, onion, and a lot of coriander, to be honest. You can add one small chili if you want to add more flavor, you know. And we put some drops of oil. That's it.
And some shredded cabbage there. And tell me, what's on top of the chicken taco?
On top of the chicken taco, it's a red onion. You know, it's like we made like a pickled red onion.
Because really sweet, crunchy, nice offset to that, the softer chicken inside.
Yeah.
And then what's the sauce on the side there?
The sauce for the...
For the chicken?
Yeah, for the chicken is a green sauce, green tomatillo. It's a special tomatillo from Mexico only. It's give like the sour flavor to the chicken, you know. It's a very nice sauce. One of my favorites.
Really, really delicious. James, are you enjoying Mexican food?
Oh, mate, it's absolutely amazing. Actually, I ate in a Mexican restaurant yesterday and it was a massive disappointment. So to have actual Mexican food that's done correctly is brilliant.
You can tell me off air who the massive disappointment was.
The tongue for me, I'm a massive fan of offal as well. So I'm all about nose to tail cooking, using the whole animal, no wastage. So, and not enough people are using offal. And this tongue is definitely the best one out of the three for me.
Really?
Yeah, it's very interesting.
I've only had the tongue so far, so I'm gonna move on to that. How would you, in your kind of world, how would you cook tongue, and what makes it unique as an ingredient?
Tongue is a fairly long process where you have to kind of brine it for 24 hours, and then you kind of blanch it to take off the sinew around it, and then slow cook it. That's how I would do it anyway. I kind of you could either braise it or you can put it in a sous vide and cook it for hours and hours and hours. Yeah. So yeah. Mm-hmm.
Chef Isaac, how are you cooking it for the tacos?
Yeah, this is the way, as James said, you know, we're cooking for long hours to really get this softness like a butter meat, you know, you put on your mouth and it's melted automatically.
Absolutely delicious. Now, we wouldn't be so cruel as to eat these delicious tacos in front of you and not offer you the chance to try some too. So we'd like to give you, we've got two 250 dirham vouchers to spend at El Mustacho, which is opening in JLT in a couple of weeks' time, and you could be one of the first people to dine there for free. But it's not that easy, I'm afraid. We've got some tricky clues this afternoon. You just need to do this.
Guess the ingredient.
Sally Prosser from My Custard Pie is my keeper of the clues this afternoon. We've had some great guesses and we've had some pretty out there guesses. Sally, what's the next clue?
So, hopefully this will give you a better steer.
Today's mystery ingredient should have a glossy skin that is deep green in colour, although the skin turns yellow as it ripens. It is at the height of its lively tart flavour when it's green. Like other citrus fruits, their inner flesh is encased in 8 to 10 segments.
If you know what that mystery ingredient is, and I think you're right, Sally, I think that might be the one that gives it away.
Tipping point.
Yeah. Get in touch on the text line, or you can get in touch via the Dubai Eye Messenger app, totally free for download on iOS or Android. Just do that now. Your guess and your name, and we will put you into the draw to win two 250 vouchers to spend at Los? L, I'm getting my Spanish mixed up. El Mostacho is opening in JLT in just a few short weeks. And if it hasn't clinched that for you, we've got more clues coming up. We have been joined by Josh Benson, who is the man behind Bistro. And it's your last chance to go to In the Park tomorrow. Josh, this is in Kazan Park. It's closing for the season on Saturday.
Correct. So it'll be the last weekend that you'll be able to enjoy it, even though it's getting a little hot this weekend.
It's getting hot. I've got to tell you, as you know, I'm a real regular at Bistro, as is my family. And my daughter heard me say the word cappuccino last night, and she went, "I love baby chino." It's like, you are a spoiled Dubai brat, my child. Because you do free baby chinos at Bistro.
Every day, 24/7.
Brilliant.
They are epic. Chef James Hitchens is here. He is the man behind Hitchens Kitchens, who is doing a personal chef and cookery lessons and some food consulting as well. And we're also joined by the lovely Sally Prosser from My Custard Pie. Beautiful images, fantastic, insightful information on food and travel. Follow her at My Custard Pie. Now, Sally, you have to work for your free food, I'm afraid, this afternoon. And you are indeed keeper of the clues.
Guess the ingredient.
This is clue number 5. We're going to give 2 clues, I think, in this segment.
Okay.
Go for it.
Today's mystery ingredient can be either sour or sweet. The 2 main sour varieties are the Tahitian and the Key, which feature an acidic and tart taste, while the sweet variety lacks citric acid and is sweeter in flavour.
Ah, factoids left, right and centre this afternoon. If you know what this mystery ingredient is, get in touch. We've got two 250 dirham vouchers to spend at El Mostacho. It's opening in JLT Cluster I later on, hopefully in April. Josh, how are the stress levels on the old restaurateur front?
Normal for the city, I think.
He said resignedly. What's been your kind of your real personal highlight now? You've opened Bistro, you've opened numerous branches now and continue to expand. What's been the moment you thought, wow, this is exactly going where I want it to go?
There's always a few pivotal moments, but I think the main one was, I always thought if I just continue to try and do the right thing, the good things will come. You know, regardless of social media pressures, whatever, which I sort of I detuned from very quickly because I realised I'd go insane if I didn't. But I just thought, you know, it's I probably opened at quite a difficult time in the city as well. It was going through a lot of changes. But I just thought, I just knew if I just kept doing the right thing and just being true to product, true to, you know, what I was trying to deliver, then it would come good, and opportunities would come, and you know, and hopefully make a success of it. And that's probably been one of the greatest feelings, that I stuck to the course, and it's starting to bear a bit of fruit, which is nice.
And it's, you're being very modest there, because whenever I go into Bistro, it's absolutely packed. At the weekends, it's families having breakfast. When I go during the week, it's people like me sitting with their laptops, having lunch, drinking way too many coffees and getting some work done. And then in the evenings, you're doing great dinner deals. So it's got that real momentum. And also, I love the Kids Eat Free, just, you know, to give you a little plug there. We've had some questions coming in, excuse me, Josh, asking, where can I find tomatillo sauce here in Dubai?
I don't know if you can, because we're making our own at the moment. So you'll be able to find it in JLT in a few weeks.
Can people buy it to take away?
Yes, we'll be having a small retail range of things, including the drinks that you have in front of you now. But the salsas and the chips and things, these will be part of the deal, part of the package.
Tell me about these. We've put 2 beautiful glass bottles in front with your mustachioed man in his sombrero. What have we got here?
So one is the first one is the pineapple and mint agua fresh. So these are classic fruit-driven drinks, and this one is a mix of pineapple, mint, and we use agave syrup, not sugar syrup, in this one because we're trying to keep things as much sugar free.
I'd just like to say Sally is absolutely nectar.
I am.
It's an empty bottle.
Has it got lime as well?
Yes, and yeah. Most of the agave have lime, but basically what you do is you take the core ingredients, which is just in this case those, you blitz them down. You let them cool down. Sometimes it's better to leave them for a bit longer as possible in a fridge, and then you add sparkling water. And when you're ready to serve, generally you'd serve them over ice. In here, it's a little bit more difficult, but we're going to have a range of probably four to six, and that will be our primary drinks. Again, like Bistro, it will just be homemade in house, as little sugar as possible. You know, we're not a sugar free place, but I try and limit the impact, which leads me to the next one where you have to use sugar, which is the horchata, which is a rice driven drink. You soak rice overnight, which sounds sort of weird, but once you've done that, then you blitz it in the blender, and then you strain it, and you're left with the rice liquid. The way we will be doing it is actually toasting the rice first. So you get a nuttier, toastier flavor to it. And then there is different ways to do it, but we've done a little combination of milk and condensed milk. And then cinnamon is a big element. And I've also then used some cinnamon-infused sugar just to try and balance and add depth of flavor.
The only way I can describe it is it tastes like you put churros in a blender. It tastes like churros.
That's the cinnamon dusting that you're reflecting on.
I would just like to say, this is not a bad thing in any shape or form. It's absolutely delicious. And I've never had it in Dubai, actually. So a good, a nice addition to the city. Thank you very much. And will people be able to get this for delivery?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, it is quite a delivery-focused concept, this
one. What's the space itself going to be like?
Shoebox. It's probably the best way to describe it. We'll have 13 seats inside.
I'm all over smaller restaurants. I am so over huge places that feel like airplane hangars, and they might be half full, but they still have no atmosphere. I'm all about the smaller covers.
One small element, as there will be a bistro across the road during the winter months and the better months in the evening, we're going to open up the outdoor terrace of bistro for El Mustacho guests. So you'll be able to come and grab it and just literally walk from one building to the other, and there's about 30-40 seats there. So it opens up to about 50 in the nicer months, and then we'll focus more on takeaway and delivery during the summer months.
Message that come on, I'm saying, does the restaurant have a celiac/gluten-free menu? You can say a flat no if you want.
Well, we, as you know, Bistro, we bend and turn and toss to do whatever we can for anyone. But this one, we need to respect what the ingredients are to keep it very real. And so, if a dish doesn't require it, then it won't have it for the sake of that. But if it does, it will. So it's not, you know, we will have knowledge of everything, and you'll be able to ask us any question. We'll have a very clean and knowledgeable answer for you, but we're not going to shape this menu in that way. It's going to stay true to form. It's going to stay true to what it needs to be to have these flavors.
I don't think you need to apologize in any shape or form.
I'm used to it.
What, used to getting kind of challenged on?
Yeah, used to apologising if something, like, you know, in this city particularly, you know. But as you know, I mean, we do what we can in Bistro, but this one needs to stay, you know, true to form.
Because I'm just going
to
say, you've got two very large Mexican chefs standing behind you right now, who I think would be very unhappy if you started messing with their dishes.
Right,
and I personally would not mess, just saying. Now, we talked about your highlights when it's come to opening the restaurants around the city. What's been a low moment when you thought, do you know what, it's just not worth it? Please don't cry. I can't cope with it.
The beginning was particularly harsh mentally, the first few months.
How long has Bistro been open for?
4 years now, just about in this coming April. So, but yeah, the opening sort of opening few months, which I put solely on my own shoulders for mistakes I've made, presumptions I might have made, everything, but unfortunately quite reflective, and I realized them very quickly, and I put a process into adjusting. But I felt like I wasn't even starting at zero. I felt I was starting behind zero because of some mistakes I made. So to rebuild from you know, behind the goalpost, so to speak, it was very challenging. And that sort of, it's that equal, that was probably the hardest, but it's also the most enjoyable and satisfying, right, of all of it, to be able to get through it all. So,
and you're ideally placed now to start your other businesses, I presume, because you've made those mistakes.
Yeah, right. I've learned a lot. You know, I learned more in the first year than 15 years in the business.
Really?
Yeah, absolutely. And I feel that as you will always make mistakes, but I feel I can limit those mistakes to you know, things that I can maybe not control as opposed to things I can control.
Yeah. And James, you were saying, you know, in an ideal world, you'd think about opening your own cafe, restaurant, and at the minute you're thinking now is not the right time. Josh, what if you were going to give some advice to someone who's thinking about starting an eatery in Dubai, what would be your biggest kind of takeaway from the last few years?
You can't reflect on any other city that sort of we all come from and try and use that business model here. It just doesn't work. The city, the market, everything is just, you need to sort of sit back and strip everything you want to do and your demographics and the city and the locations, everything, and really pull it back and look at, does that work in that situation? Because I don't believe you can really start very small and grow organically here, because you don't have natural footfall. You don't have, you know, you can take over a smaller warehouse space or a shop front for next to nothing a year and be good at what you do and gain customers that way and grow organically. It just doesn't work here. And so there is a big investment, and locations are, there's what I found when I was looking at the beginning was there was always a major business issue with the location that I was looking at. There was always a problem that could be business critical that would, you know, whether it's parking, whether it's access, whether it's whatever, whether it's indoor, outdoor seating. There's, you know, I was very fortunate to stumble across the site I have, but that was the one thing that I'd almost given up, because every place you looked at, there was a problem. Whether even zoning, there's always an issue with the site here. And then you add the cost of doing it on top. It's not easy, and it's a very big risk.
So I won't do it then.
I'm out. I'm out.
Sort of what I'm saying.
Helen's Cafe will never come into fruition.
I think I'm going to wait until we move back to the UK in a few years' time to go down that road.
But those that do well do really well. And I think, Josh, you have learned, as you said, so much in these last 4 years and are making a lot of people very happy. What's been the biggest surprise on the menu at Bistro? Is something you've thought, oh, we'll put it on and see what happens. And you've gone, wow, people love it.
I think things like the evolution of things, garden bowls and things like that, which
your breakfast bowls, really
good. Right, which I don't think many people are doing. There's a few things we've done. The beetroot hummus is probably the first one that no one was doing in the city, and you know, I mean, maybe in spots, but that was the first thing that was quite unique for us. So that's probably the first standout.
And also, it's really eye-catching. So if you see someone getting beetroot hummus served at their table, you're like, oh, what's that purple thing? What's that? And you ask the waiter, and you know. Yeah. And it grows like that.
It was a real conversation piece at the beginning. So yeah. That's probably the one that had that sort of immediate impact.
And the honeycomb chocolate.
And the homemade chocolates. That's been a good addition.
Now, I think we've got time for one more clue.
Guess the ingredient.
Sally, this is our final clue. Hit me.
Right. Today's mystery ingredient is a staple of Asian cuisine and is used mainly for its juice, although the zest and leaves are also used in cooking. Today's mystery ingredient. Cooking. There was no full stop there. Today's mystery ingredient cooks raw fish in a ceviche and is the key part of a famous dessert from Florida, traditionally made with a special variety of today's mystery ingredient. It is included on a variety of dishes on the menu at El Mostacho.
If you know what that mystery ingredient is, you could be winning two 250 dirham vouchers to spend at El Mostacho, just opening JLT, hopefully in a few short weeks. When we come back, we'll be revealing it. It's the Thursday brunch here with you until 2 o'clock this afternoon. I'm Helen Farmer, and I might be having a sugar rush in about 10 seconds. So if I start giggling, I'm very, very sorry. Chef James Hitchens has just given me some chocolate torte. My days. How do you make that, sir?
Well, it's a flourless chocolate torte. Again, you'll find it on our Good to Great package. It's very, very simple, really. It's chocolate, sugar, butter, and some ground almond.
Oh, so delicious.
So, yeah, so what we like to do is we like to have, like, with our packages, there's exactly from, like, start from the basics, go all the way up to kind of as close to fine dining as you can in your house. But like I said, we've got the Good to Great package, which is taking classics, going up to restaurant standard, and then you've got the Healthy Eats package, and they've got the hosting packages.
So the chocolate torte is not on the Healthy Eats?
No, it's definitely not on the Healthy Eats, no. It's on the Good to Great, which is more of your classics. Like I said, it's a good you've got a good selection of recipes to choose from.
Absolutely delicious. Thank you so much. Now, Sally, You've also given us some of these hot cross buns.
Would you like some?
I'll come around and get them myself. Yeah.
So you brought these in from Baker and Spice. We've got a traditional, which is a kind of the lighter coloured, and we have a little bite. You talk us through it.
Well, I actually haven't tasted. There's a chocolate one as well. No, I've eaten the traditional, which I really like. I think if you're used to the supermarket ones, you find them quite dense because they're a slow rise, a real bread one. They're not as light and fluffy as supermarket.
Not as cakey. That's no bad thing.
Well, yeah, I think. And it's better for you because the yeast develops. They've got a nice glaze on top, just enough spice, not too sweet. There's a really nice citrus flavour. And I believe, I think Chef Alia told me they make a like... an orange jam that they stir through, and then so you get the bits of citrus peel, which I think. But I hadn't tasted the chocolate ones. Have you tasted those? I don't know what they're like.
Okay, go on, Tali, have a bite.
Oh right,
don't be shy. And Josh is getting stuck in there as well. So yeah, it's sticky. There's fruit going through it, but I'm sure it looks like maybe they've used that orange jam to glaze it. And you've brought along a jam as well. I think I've had this on the Baker and Spice yogurt and granola, I think, before. Do you know what flavour it is? You got
no,
a full mouth.
I don't. I think it's just that. Oh, I'm talking my mouth off.
Just like a fruit compote.
Yeah, fresh. I know their jams are lower in sugar. There's like fresh jams.
Absolutely delicious. Josh, you've got. Are you ready to talk?
I am.
Tell me.
The traditional one for me. I'm not feeling the chocolate one, but the traditional one I think is really, really good. I mean, I grew up on these as well. And I agree with you. I like the denser, more real ones. And they just have that true flavour that takes you back to childhood every single time you take a bite. Yeah. So
they're more nostalgic. Satisfying as well. I think you have to eat the lighter ones. You have to eat more than one, don't you?
Right.
But you're more satisfied
with
that.
Any excuse.
It's so true. It's so true. Okay, I'm having a little bite of the chocolate. And it's quite dark. It looks almost like a dark rye bread. It's obviously not.
The chocolate one doesn't do anything for me, but yeah, the traditional one.
I think if it's going to be chocolate, let's do chocolate.
Yeah.
Like your chocolate tort. Hang on. You guys talk if you
can. We all
James,
have a mouthful.
How do you make hot cross buns, James? Okay, talk.
To be fair, I haven't actually ever made hot cross buns.
No.
So there might be another expert in the room that might be able to help you out there.
I have. Well, there's a recipe on my blog.
Oh, is that really?
Plugged, yeah. No, from a long time ago.
I was just talking to Sally before, and I think we were differing on one point where I was taught a few years ago that an authentic hot cross bun had Earl Grey tea. Inside it.
I have never heard that. Never.
I'd be interested if anyone else had heard that because that was taught by my ex-chef who was very adamant about it. So I'd be curious whether that's something else that people know.
It was seasonal. So when you were through a season of fasting, which this was in the UK, you wouldn't have anything dairy or eggs during that time. And apparently in Elizabethan times, you could be fined if you ate them outside Good Friday, which is bizarre.
Really?
Or a burial or Christmas.
I'm sure in some, parts of the UK, that law probably still stands.
Yeah.
Absolutely delicious. I'm with you. The chocolate one it's okay. The traditional one, spot on. Now, Mexican desserts. Isaac, what on the dessert front is on the menu at El Mustacho?
Okay, we will have the traditional homemade flan.
Ooh.
Okay, and we were thinking on put some churros after, you know.
Always do churros. Churros is always the answer.
The reason he's sort of stalling there because we're not 100% sure on it yet because everyone does it, and it's almost that
because
go-to.
They're delicious.
Yes, but you know we're trying to introduce a few other things. So we're looking at different desserts. A little part of it is down to the capabilities of how we can produce because we've got quite a small kitchen, so we're respecting the sort of the savoury options first and foremost, and then the rest is going to fall into place. So churros is on a list of about four or five different things, and we'll probably start with one, which will probably be the flan, because we'll cook them in the jars and we'll send them delivery in a little jar, so something like that.
So great.
So that's going to be our first protocol, and then we're just going to let it grow a little organically of what we introduce, and you know, a little bit demand as well, see what people are asking for. So, but I personally was just trying to stay off the churros for stage one at least, because it's a bit cliche to just go with it, I think.
Flan gets my vote because it's like custard, isn't it?
Bang on brand for Sally Prosser. Now, we do have time to reveal our mystery ingredient. Sally is keeper of the clues. You can tell. Well, come on.
It actually doesn't say on this sheet, but I'm guessing it is lime.
It is lime. And our winner this afternoon is Angela, who simply texted in, Limey McLimeface. And it made me giggle. So, Angela, you have won 250 Durham vouchers to spend with El Mustacho when it opens in JLT in a couple of weeks. And the winner of our cookery lesson with Chef James Hitchens from Hitchens Kitchens is... Mika, we loved your suggestion on sorted chopping boards, something that I need to do and get sorted in my kitchen. You've inspired me this afternoon. Now, I've just time to say a final thank you to our fantastic foodie panel. Josh Benson, man behind Bistro and the new Mexican eatery in JLT, all the very best to you and your Mexican men. Chef
thank
Isaac,
you.
Thanks for joining us, Stephanie, on the mic. Chef Jose in the corner, thank you for feeding us some delicious dishes. And as I said, some really unexpected flavours there. Tortilla soup is an absolute must try when it opens. So good luck with the next couple of weeks. Keep those stress levels chill. And we'll be coming to see you in JLT when it opens.
Thanks, it's been an absolute pleasure.
Thank you. And James Hitchens, thank you. That chocolate tort was absolutely epic. And for anyone listening who wants to learn how to cook, you are the man to go to.
Thank you very much.
Pleasure. And Sally, thank you. I'm really looking forward to hearing about your the hot cross bun testing.
Thank you, that was fun.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.